This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
Hi, I'm Sarah from Sarah Cannon Portraits, and I have had trichotillomania since I was 9, so over 25 years now. I should give myself an anniversary party. And I started pulling from my lashes when I was little, and then my trichotillomania really took off more in college when I was going through a really stressful time, and it evolved from lashes to eyebrows because eventually there were no lashes to pull anymore. So primarily those two areas, but as I've gotten older, there have been more areas that have come up for me in very unique circumstances, which has been really interesting on my pulling journey.
Can you tell us a little bit about some of those maybe new areas that you found yourself pulling from?
Specifically from my scalp, I had a baby in 2020, and when I was postpartum, I noticed that I was having some postpartum hair loss a few months after I had her, which is a common thing to happen. But I would pull at the little tiny baby hairs, like right along the like edge of my scalp. And I kept telling myself, like, I need to not make this a thing. I like very consciously tried to not, because I had this like sense of pride that I wasn't pulling from my scalp, even though, you know, it's not necessarily something that I should be ashamed of, but it just felt like one more thing. And, you know, we're all trying to not have one more thing. So I was trying really hard, and that was fine for a while up until this year. My daughter turned 4, and I suddenly wasn't able to tolerate my shampoo that I had been using for over a year. Something about it just made the buildup on my scalp feel different. So I ended up switching shampoos over and over again. It took me so much trial and error to find something that worked for me. And the shampoo that I found is like $38 a bottle, which is way more than I typically spend on a bottle of shampoo. But that is the trick to X, as I like to call it.
I love that. I love the trick tax. You text me hilarious things. I wish I could share them right now. Like, I literally screenshot yourself. I'm like, you need to post this on the internet because it's amazing. Give us the details of the shampoo if you don't mind.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but I think it's called like Way, like O-A-U-I. I use the shampoo and the conditioner just in case. I'm not going to mess around with what's working. And it's just been so beautiful and wonderful. I still do pull, like notice a little bit of pulling if I don't wash my hair within a couple of days, but that's only when it's really, really built up and I really ought to wash it anyway. It's not happening on day 2 or day 1 anymore. So that's quite the improvement. And I also decided to get bangs this year, and that I wasn't really sure. I was like, well, if I have shorter hairs in the front, like on my forehead, is that going to make me want to pull them more like my postpartum hairs? Or will it help? And I actually feel like it helped, because this thicker layer of hair over the little baby hairs has blocked it out. So it's been like really interesting that bangs helped me not pull as much. And it also helped me not pull as much from my eyebrows, because most of the time I can't see them. So I don't notice when there's like a little one growing in. I just don't reach for them as much because they kind of are hiding behind a curtain. So it's helped in a couple of different ways, which is really cool.
And it looks so cute. I love bangs on you.
I'm obsessed with it. I had bangs my whole life until I was about 16. And then I was like, I'm too cool for this. And then, you know, I'm 34 and I'm like, I need a change. And it was perfect.
I think it's Way. I say Way. I use, yeah. Is that, do we talked about this, right? Did we go back and forth between the brands, you and
well,
I?
The whole reason I decided to try it was because you recommended, I think, a different product from them, but the same brand. And I was like, okay, finally, I'm gonna dive in. I was avoiding it because I was like, It's a little fancier than I usually go, but like definitely worth it. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I think I'm gonna have to try the shampoo because I do the leave-in conditioner. That is my holy grail. I got it in an Ipsy bag, years ago,
Oh, yeah.
and it was running low, and I put a little water in it. Like I use it till the very last drop, and I just rebuy and rebuy and rebuy. So I will try the shampoo myself and
What's the
conditioner.
routine of that? Do you do it like weekly, or what does that look like for you?
So it's every time I'm out of the shower. And then I take my hair out of the towel, I spray it on the ends, and that's how I brush my hair. Is every time I wash the hair, I put the leave-in conditioner in. Yeah, I do the ends, but of course it's going to go through the whole hair because it's on the brush. But yeah, just the ends every time, almost like a detangler, and then I do it, and I just feel like it makes my hair so like silky and nice.
Okay, I was picturing it more like a hair mask where you like leave it in and let it sit and then rinse it out or something. But if it's just a spray, that seems really easy.
Yeah, and I think even the hairdressers that I've seen, but even my most recent hairdresser, I was like, why is my hair so knotty all the time? And she's like, it's just your hair. And I'm like, you know what? We're a leave-in conditioner person. And I actually, when I was a swimmer, when I was a little kid, my mom would always buy me leave-in conditioner. So that was like always my thing. And I just continued into adulthood. And yeah, my hair is still knotty, but with the conditioner, it's much better.
Yeah, that's great. I feel like we have similar hair types. Like mine is fine and naturally straight. So, yeah.
Now, let me ask you, I'm the same way. If my hair is like day three, dirty, not only am I going to play around in it more, I actually will like find myself scratching my scalp, like looking for things. Do you do that too?
Yeah, and that's such a new feeling for me because I never really felt that way. Even with the postpartum hairs, it was like, oh, these are little baby hairs similar to brows or to lashes. So it made sense to me, but I never found myself wanting to pull like longer strands until very recently. So that was a very new experience because I feel like the sensation of pulling from the scalp and the urges to pull from the scalp to me feel different than my urges to pull from other areas. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, and it's also, to me, it's fascinating that I not only will pull the hair from the scalp, but then I'm like also like scratching it. Like it's like I'm looking for other things too. And like, of course, that's a different BFRB. It's like all these things that we're doing, and it's just so interesting how I know that I always liked my nails short, but I know that I have to maintain the nails as short. Otherwise, if they're too long, I'm in there. I'm feeling it. They can pull things so much easier. It's just, they're all kind of connected. They're all together.
Yep, that's true.
So, the last time we spoke was a long time ago, a few years ago. And I want to hear if you remember maybe how you felt before and then maybe how you feel now coming on the show again.
So, the first time I came on your show with Instagram Live, first of all, how brave. But I do remember I was still in the really early days of motherhood, and I didn't really know you super well. And it was my first time doing any sort of podcast or anything like that. And I did not feel nearly as confident in general as I do now. Like I've grown so much, even just as a person, but my trick journey has been so much like so improved. Since doing the podcast with you before, I have done your sharing our story sessions, the guided journal sessions. And just doing that in itself was like such a pivotal moment for me in like my self-love, my self-confidence, and allowing myself to feel how I feel, especially when it comes to pulling. And it's really improved my pulling in general, even though it seems like I'm pulling more. In reality, it's actually a lot better than it would have been had I not gone through those sessions with you.
Well, thank you. You are the OG. It's
Yeah.
like, I remember, obviously, yeah, Instagram Live, I don't know what I was thinking. I was scared to death, but I don't know why I got on there. And I would have to put on extra makeup because my cheeks would get so red. I'd be so nervous. Even with the makeup, you could see it. So I'd put extra on. And I was scared to allow time for thinking. Like, I was like, I have to make sure I ask her a question right when she's done talking. I don't want it to feel awkward. And you could probably hear that on the recording because I didn't edit that part. So.
Honestly, I didn't look back and re-listen to my first one. I would love to, but It's like a little experiment to see how much I've changed. Like, I didn't want my old episode to affect my most recent episode. So.
My voice is different in the old ones. I'm like very like customer service. So, anyway, tell me how, and I'm like, oh my God, Barbara, lower it. Lower that octave, please. Like, it's okay, babe. You're fine. But yeah, so thank you so much for being an OG with sharing our stories and trusting me with your story. And again, on here. So I remember too feeling nervous and wanting to make sure I've had you comfortable on the show. And now when I see you, I feel like you're just one of my friends that I get to relax with and have fun and chat with. And so it's really cool how we went from, strangers finding each other on the internet to someone that I've seen in real life and hung out with. And then also I talk to pretty regularly. So it's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool to see how when I first discovered you on Instagram, I was like, someone wrote a book about this. Like, I couldn't believe that it was out there. And I ordered it immediately. I don't know if I pre-ordered it or if I ordered it like the first week it was out, but like it was July of 2020 that I ordered it. And I was like, this is going to be my postpartum book. It's going to be great. Turns out I didn't have as much time to read as I envisioned, but I still loved receiving it and feeling so seen. I just couldn't believe it existed. And then when you asked me to come on your podcast the first time, I was fangirling. I couldn't believe that. And then, we shared our stories through your sessions and we got closer. And I was like, I can't believe I'm a part of this. And then I get to meet you in real life. And I was like, I can't believe this. It's like we keep having these levels of fangirling for each other. And it's such a beautiful thing. It's such a community now, and it's like really cool to see how things have progressed in just a few years.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it's the best part of social media is this part, getting to meet you. And it's, I say this often, that when I got to know you, it felt like there was no awkwardness because we just already connected. Like, we had such a deep connection through BFRBs that, like, anything else, it was just like, we're already friends. We're already best friends. We're already talking about whatever. There's nothing to be nervous about because the thing that is so close to us and sometimes for many people so secretive, we bonded over that first and then other things. And so it's really cool.
That's true. I didn't think about it from that perspective, but it definitely makes sense. And also having virtual dance parties, that's a bonding experience.
Never forget. Never forget. That was fun. Now, for listeners who are going to go back and listen to the first episode, great. I'm so happy for you. Some grace for me with the high-pitched voice. Sarah, you're great no
Probably
matter
me
what.
too. I'm gonna listen soon, and it's definitely going to be different.
Now, we talked about your college project, your art project, and how that was a really big moment for you. Can you please share about that again?
Yeah, so I went to Northern Illinois University and I got a Bachelor of Fine Arts in drawing. And at the end of my senior year, we did a senior showcase. So all of the art majors got together and put on a gallery show where students and family and friends were all invited to come see our artwork that said something about our career as an art student and going off into the world. So, when it came time to figure out what I wanted to do for my senior show, I knew that I wanted to do portraits. I've been drawing portraits since I could remember. I used to draw portraits on notebook paper at school of my friends and trade them for Spice Girls memorabilia, school supplies, you name it. So, in a way, I've always been a portrait artist and I knew that I needed to incorporate portraits, but I thought, well, what could make a portrait interesting? I liked the idea of a self-portrait. I had done some as assignments and I wanted to do more, but I thought, well, what's so interesting? What's so inspiring to see self-portraits without it being self-absorbed? And I thought about it and I thought, oh, but I don't want to do a self-portrait because I have no eyelashes right now. And then it hit me like, oh, that's actually kind of interesting. What if I just do a self-portrait without eyelashes? What if I do portraits of myself pulling? what could that look like? Like, let's just see how it goes. So I did my first drawing, not sure if it was going to make it into the show or not, but I put a lot of love into it. It was a picture of me checking my lashes in the mirror. So it's like a profile of my face, and my fingers are lifting my eyelid up to check because that's part of my routine with pulling typically, is to go check in the mirror and see how everything looks. And so I put it up on the wall for my critique with my fellow students. And, you know, people give their opinions about it. They critique it essentially before you talk about what it's about. And people had all different kinds of ideas of what it could mean. But then afterwards, my professor asked me to explain it, and I did. And that was the first time I'd shared with anybody who wasn't extremely close to me. And I was going to have to see these people again all semester long. So it was actually kind of a big risk for me to admit something to all of these fellow students that I do something that I find a lot of shame in and that I think people are going to think I'm weird for. But at that point, I felt like I also kind of had nothing to lose. So I explained it, and people were just stunned. Like, I remember looking around the room, and people were just like kind of in shock. And my professor thanked me for sharing. And that was the beginning of me sharing with strangers. And it's done nothing but good things because it's really opened up a lot of conversations between me and other people who also feel the same way and didn't realize that anyone else experienced it. So I felt like the more I opened up, the more rewarding it was. And that's in itself is a really valuable thing.
Tell us now, from that moment, sharing, how do you think your relationship with your trichotillomania has changed over time?
I think the biggest difference between when I first shared with my class and when I first put those drawings up on the wall for everybody to see, I did a series of three drawings of the process of pulling. And I think the biggest thing I've noticed is that when I feel like I'm talking about it, I don't feel like I'm confessing anymore as much as I used to. It feels like I'm just saying something as a fact. That's just a part of who I am. Just as much as I'm telling somebody that it's my favorite color or this is a show I like to watch, like it just feels like another part of me that I don't mind talking about. And if they feel uncomfortable, then I have ways to navigate that. And I didn't have that before. So I've really grown in my identity around it. And owning it as a part of me and not a flaw in me.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. So some people, when they describe their experience with trichotillomania, they use the word suffering. Do you feel like that is accurate for your life with a disorder?
I think, like anything that you go through that is difficult, you may feel a sense of suffering at certain points, but mostly I feel like once you've accepted this part of yourself, it becomes more of an accommodation than something that you suffer with. So it impacts the way that you do things, how you accommodate for yourself every day, the choices that you make throughout your day because of this that other people wouldn't have if they didn't have it. I think that's the biggest difference. But even if you don't necessarily feel shame from it, you still, it's something that you have to consider in your day.
What are some of the accommodations that maybe you make in your daily life that you might not even think about that just come naturally because of the disorder?
So some of the accommodations that I have in place for myself are not having any light furniture, especially near a bed or a couch where I may normally start pulling if I'm sitting down or laying down, because if I have a light surface near me, I'm more likely to put my lashes there because I can see them more clearly and I can therefore count them more clearly. And that's a part of my whole routine. I also make different choices in the things that I purchase. I can only purchase certain products such as hair care and makeup that doesn't make me pull more. And sometimes that means that I have to spend more money than I'd like to, but if it means that I'm saving my lashes or my hair, then that's important enough for me to invest in.
It's even like the idea of knowing where my hands are at all times, like trying my best to know, noticing that I'm feeling things, I'm looking around, I'm touching. I think people who don't have trichotillomania maybe aren't going to the scalp as often as I am, of course, unless something is actually itching. But it is that idea of I kind of have to check in all the time. I'm kind of always checking in on myself, which is great. At first, super annoying. Didn't really want to be doing that at 10 years old. But now, as an adult, I can say, like, okay, well, what is this trying to tell me? And that's something that I think has changed my relationship with it because I'm looking at it as like a cue for something as opposed to just it has a mind of its own and it's doing whatever it wants. Yes, it does do that, but I can look at it in a different light now. How about you?
Yeah, when I first looked into trichotillomania for my senior drawing show, I had to write a little artist statement about my pieces and explain what everything was. And at that time, it was 2014, so about 10 years ago. At that time, all I could find was that it was an impulse control disorder. So to me, that made me feel like I couldn't control myself. Whereas now I feel like when I see it as a cue, as a mental health tool, I take back the control in some sense. Like, yes, when I have pulling sprees, it feels out of control, but it's the repair afterwards that makes me feel back in control. Checking in, why did I feel like I needed to do that? What do I need right now? How can I help myself right now? How can I love myself anyway? Which is a big thing that I think everybody could use. Loving yourself through the things that you feel like aren't very lovable are really important. And if that means I feel a little bit out of control for a moment and then I get my focus back, then that's okay.
How would you say your pulling has been in the last maybe 2 weeks?
Well, the last 2 weeks, my pulling has been a little bit more regular than it has been. My daughter has been going through a big sleep regression, so we've been waking up several times a night. I feel like I have a newborn again, and being tired is definitely one of my biggest triggers for having the urge to pull. It makes me more irritable and stressed and just uncomfortable. Any feeling of being uncomfortable typically leads to wanting to pull. So it's, that self-soothing tool that I have, and I know that that's where it's coming from, and I know that one day she will sleep through the night again because she's done it before and she will do it again. So I have to keep that in mind. And we are also heading into the fall season and I live in the Chicago suburbs. So we just changed our clocks and it's dark at 4:30. And I know that that's going to affect my levels of needing to pull more because in the summertime I tend to pull less, which is really interesting.
So after your college presentation, your art show, you continue to do art. Tell us where you are now with that.
So, I am still a portrait artist. I think I will forever be a portrait artist. Right now, I create custom portraits of mostly pets. People love their pets, and I love that. But I also do portraits of people and portraits of houses. I mostly work with acrylic paint or watercolor paint, but I also draw with pencil or soft pastel, which is like chalk. So I really enjoy making very personal artwork for people. And I find it fascinating that I have this disorder where I pull all the little hairs from my own body, but I end up drawing a million little like strokes of fur and hair into these portraits. It feels a little bit ironic that as many hairs as I've pulled in my life is probably as many hairs as I've drawn in my life.
I have never thought about that. That is really cool. Like it's spot on. I think that is exactly right. Do you find that when you are painting that you almost fall into a similar trance-like state as you would be maybe if you were pulling?
I absolutely do feel a similar sense of a trance-like state when I am painting versus pulling. I think the main difference is the emotion behind it. With pulling, it feels a bit like an itch that I'm trying to scratch. Whereas with painting or drawing, it feels like a different kind of release and maybe more like a celebration of how I'm feeling rather than soothing how I'm feeling. It's like an embrace rather than a pacifying thing.
So recently you were telling me that you were going to a writer's workshop. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Have you gone yet?
Yes, and I absolutely loved it. It made me feel like my passion for writing was reignited, which was such a beautiful feeling because I haven't written in a long time. But I have this idea for a children's book about my childhood, and I wrote it, and I drew thumbnails for it. And I've always wanted to be a children's book illustrator. That's been my dream since I was 4. So I'm finally allowing myself to explore that side of my art journey. So when I went to this writer's workshop, she had us do a short writing exercise where we wrote another short story right there on the spot. She just put a teddy bear on the table and she said, "Write something about this teddy bear, go." And it immediately brought me back to more of my childhood stories of going up to my family's log cabin in Michigan for the summers. And it just came so naturally to me. But part of that story that I wrote right there in the workshop shares a bit more about a struggle that I had in childhood. And it made me think about a time that Barbara and I chatted about me possibly representing trichotillomania in a children's book in my illustrations. I didn't necessarily want to make a book about trichotillomania. I just wanted the representation to be in there, just as if it was just a normal thing. Like you might see representation of all kinds of kids in children's books without the book being about their representation. So I'm considering if I write this second book from this writer's workshop, maybe in some of the illustrations from my struggles as a child and dealing with these big feelings, maybe I'm pulling in one of those illustrations. And that could be really cool to see.
I would love it. It would be amazing. It would be amazing. And Sarah, I'm so silly. You had another presentation. That's what I meant to ask you because I wanted to ask you about the college presentation. And then in Batavia, Batavia, with your grandmother's paintings, you did it twice, right? It was two times.
Yes. So I wrote this story about my grandma at the cabin about a year ago in the wintertime. And then I promised myself as a New Year's resolution this year that I would start writing my children's book and really making that happen. And then in the spring, a fellow artist told me about an art gallery that was open to the community. Anybody could be a part of it. You just had to submit your work and be accepted. And the theme of this particular gallery show was women who inspire us. And it was just the perfect reason to kick off all of my illustrations about my time with my grandma in the little log cabin in the woods. And it was such a beautiful thing. I got to surprise her. She didn't know that there was going to be a painting of her up on the walls. And she was just so honored. And it was a beautiful moment. And then I participated in their summer show as well, which the theme was summer memories. Nostalgic summertime memories, which is exactly what my book is about once again. So it just felt very serendipitous. And I made a painting of blueberry picking in the summer, which is a big part of the book. And I got to paint myself and my sister. And it was just a really sweet moment. And I haven't had a chance to join another gallery show yet, but it really made me feel like justified in this idea that I have to keep going with my illustration ideas and my book ideas. And it really made me feel inspired and it made me open up to a lot more artists in my community, which I've never had before. And even in conversations with them, they've explored my art more and I've told them about this podcast and they're like, "Oh yeah, me too." And it's like, no matter when I bring this up, there's always someone who comes out of the woodwork and is like, "Me too." So that's really cool to see. Every single time I talk about this, that I feel a little bit more seen.
It's amazing. And I always love those moments. It's always kind of a shock to me because I'm prepared from years and years of having to explain, huh, what do you mean? So I'm always assuming everyone's gonna be clutching their pearls. When you hear, oh yeah, me too. You're like, wait a minute, I had a whole speech. Wait, it's amazing. tell me more about you. You know, it kind of like shocks me in a good way, but I just it's such a treat to hear that.
Yeah, and usually people are really grateful that I'm bringing it up and they think that it's brave. And some of them might not even be ready to talk about it themselves with the people they know or publicly. And every single time that happens, I just point them in your direction and I say, hey, this girl, she knows what's up. She will get you there if you want to be there. If that's ever your goal, you just gotta call Barbara.
So that's why I'm getting all these followers. It's from you.
Girl, you are welcome.
Thank you, Queen. Thank you. Thank you. What would you say your trichotillomania has taught you?
One of the biggest things that my trichotillomania has taught me is how to be vulnerable. And the more vulnerable you can be, the more you can prove to yourself that you can be accepted for exactly who you are. And that has made me such an authentic and brave person. And I don't regret that at all.